if I won the national. But holding the flowers up, there was quite a few boos in the crowd. What can you say? I mean, it was probably, yeah, they didn't like the colour of my skin.
I'm Anne Dibben.
And I'm Julie Tattersall.
I'm Bev Evans, and this is Unexpected Turns.
Today, we're delighted to have on the show Maurice Burton, Britain's first black champion. Yet why, despite being such a huge talent, did he end up racing abroad?
Hi there, Maurice.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Beverly.
Hi, Maurice. It's lovely to meet you. How are you tonight?
I'm okay. I forgot all about it, but I'm ready to go now.
You're ready to go. You had a busy day?
Yeah, every day is a busy day. I was probably drifting off to sleep. But I'm ready to go.
Oh, good.
I've been very excited to have you on here because it seems ages. And in fact, Maurice, look at this. When I was putting my glass of water out, I've got my Pickwick Club placemat underneath it. I've got so many memories of you. I was talking to Beverly. Oh, my very first memory, when you all rocked up to that race at Herne Hill, there you were. All the boys arrived on their bikes. And then 10 minutes later, Maurice, you arrived in your Rolls Royce. And that was my first memory of meeting you and Jermaine and the boys.
Oh, wow.
When was that?
It was the Nationals. And of course, Jermaine and Teo rode off the front and won.
Okay.
Anyway, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So there's masses to talk about with you.
Yeah.
And if we just talk about kind of the first half of your life.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah. Could I get myself a little glass of wine with your mind?
Oh, no, definitely. Sure. You get wine.
You just give me a...
Sounds good to me.
We can start with cheers then.
Cheers, Maurice.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Have a little sip.
That's exactly the way to start our show.
Absolutely. Maurice, I'm going to take you right back to the very beginning. I wonder, could you speak a little bit about your family background and how you got into cycling?
My family background. My mum was from London, English. And my dad, he came from Jamaica. He came over here in 1948. And he met my mum at work. They got married. And I was,
what did your mum do, Maurice?
My mum was a seamstress and my dad was a tailor's presser. And they worked in the West End, in the making garments. And yeah, my dad worked in some fashion places, you know. The last place he worked, I think, was for a woman called Jean Muir.
Oh gosh.
He used to prepare garments for Mrs. Thatcher, I think Diana, that sort of thing. Because he used to sometimes bring home the newspaper and there'd be a picture with them with a garment that he'd prepared, you know? And yeah, so he was quite proud of what he did. I mean, came here, put it like this, by the time I was two, my dad got his first property. He had at one point three properties that he, you know, and we used to, when I was young, we'd have like, these would be big houses, three-story houses, and we'd live in the ground floor, and he'd rent the upper floors out. He'd rent them all out, and that's how we managed to pay the mortgage on these properties. And so that's what he used to do. Yeah, I did the same as well later on, you know, with the shop, you know, because I've got flats upstairs at the shop. I rented those flats out. That's how I paid my mortgage on the shop.
So you learnt from your dad?
Yeah, yeah.
But none of your family were cyclists?
No.
So how did you come into cycling?
Well, I don't know. I don't think my dad really was too keen on bikes at all, to tell you the truth. I got a brother, got a half-brother who was 10, he's 10 years older than me. And he came over from Jamaica when I was two. And I think that what happened, he borrowed somebody's bike and somehow he must have smashed it up. And the parents came to my dad and my dad had to pay for the bike. And all I know is that my brother said one day, because we lived in Peckham, near a place called, there was a road there, Market Schumann Road. Anyway, one day my brother had this bike. It wasn't his. He just borrowed it. I don't know, to be honest. But all I know is that he was riding this bike down the road and he saw my dad and he just got off the bike and dropped the bike and ran. He just left it. Just left the bike. But I used to ask my dad when I was about 10 or 11 if I could have a bike. It took quite a bit of courage, you know, to speak to my dad, to say, Dad, could I, you know. My father was very much, maybe put it like this, children should be heard and not seen and not heard, you see?
Yeah.
And I could never talk back to my parents or my, especially my dad. And for me to come to him and ask him for a bike, it wasn't a sort of thing I had to just, I couldn't, and if he said no, I couldn't come back to him and say, well, why not? Why can't I, you know, no, that's not the sort of thing that I could do. No,
very strict.
I tried various ways to get the bike, you know. I wanted to do a paper round, but I didn't like the idea of that. To be honest with you, what happened is that I was coming back. We used to go swimming with the school.
Yeah.
And we used to go to the local swimming bars and they took us there in the coach, see? And when we were passing his place, I saw this bike in the front garden. And so after school, I went round there and I knocked on the door and this bike had been in an accident. It was a bit smashed up.
Yeah.
And I came to some sort of arrangement with the lady, and then in the long and the short, I got the bike. And I took the bike home and I hid it in the shed. Then I got some paint, painted it, blue paint.
Nice.
One day my dad came home from work and he saw this bike and whose bike is that? I said, oh, it's not my dad, I only borrowed it. And I was 12, you see, I was 12 years old. And the first time I got that bike, the first day, I don't think, it was probably in the Easter holiday, and I never, 1968, and I think I rode it pretty much all day.
Wow.
But, yeah, riding the bike, what I noticed was very few people, pretty much no one of my age anyway, that could get the better of me on a bike. And from the very beginning, it was always my intention to be a professional rider from the age of 12. The only thing is, you see, I didn't know how or what to do. I didn't know how to go about that because there's nobody that I knew that was ever involved with cycling.
No.
And so it was when I was coming up to 15, so 2 years later, at the school, with the school, we used to go to, we could go to Herne Hill Velodrome. That was one of the options that you had at that stage.
Right.
You see, we could choose, you know, because we used to have a whole afternoon once a week for sports. As you got older, there was other options. Like before I did cycling, I could do water polo. I did water polo at Crystal Palace, you see?
Yeah.
But then by the time I was coming up to 15, I could go to Herne Hill. And so I went to Herne Hill with the school. The first day, it was on a Monday we used to go, Monday afternoons. So the first Monday, we couldn't go on the track the first day. They took us up in the grandstand and we sat there.
What bikes did you use for that then?
Herne Hill?
Yeah.
They still got the bikes there now. The person who was in charge of it all was a man called Bill Dodds.
Right.
Bill started the whole thing there. He started the VCL club as well. And it was involved with what was at the time the ILEA, the Inner London Education Authority. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was bikes up there that were supplied by a local shop, Young Cycles, supplied the bikes. They were still track bikes. They had steel cranks with cotter pins in it.
Yeah.
But they had sprint wheels, alloy wheels, sprint wheels with tubs that were glued on, you see. So they were proper, they were a basic race bike.
Nice.
You see?
Mm.
And that's what they had at Herne Hill, different size bikes. So So those were the bikes. But the first time, we didn't get to ride the bikes. We had to go up in the grandstand, and they gave us a talk. And Bill was the man in charge there. And they had also, they had some coaches there. Two of them, they were former professional riders. There was Bob Addy, who rode for Holdsworth.
Oh, yes.
He rode in the Olympics and things like that.
Mm.
And there was the other one, was a guy called John Clary. And John Clary rode in the Tour. He was a Lantern Rouge in the Tour. I think when Simpson died, I'm not sure. Uh-huh. But he was Lantern Rouge in the Tour. And there was one other guy, Mike Armstrong, who was a track rider in his younger days. So they were the coaches, apart from Bill.
Yeah.
And so what I remember from the talk, the words he said was, from here, you can go to the Olympic Games. See?
Yeah.
And so at that point, I realized, I thought, you know, this is the place that I need to be.
Mm.
So the next week, we were allowed on the track, and they show us how to ride around. We were never allowed to put our hands on the top of the handlebars. We always had to have our hands on the drop of the handlebars, you see, and the coach would shout at us or something, hands on the drops or something like that, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had a little race the first time, and I'll tell you the truth, I didn't win that race, you know, I was second. What happened was I went too early. I went with only a lap to go, and this one guy just barely beat me, but it was the last time anyone ever beat me.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because that was in September 1970. And then after that, I joined the club, and we used to go to a school, a local school, Thomas Colton School. We used to do circuit training in the winter. You know, we went to Wales as well, Snowdonia National Park. Believe it or not, I went up there last week as well, the same.
Oh, wow.
And if you look on my Facebook, there was a comment from that man, one of the coaches, Bob Addy, because I went up there twice. We went up there in 1971, and then we went up there in 1973 as well with the same coach. And he reminded me, you remember we went up there and it was rained all day.
Okay.
Anyway, we went to Wales in 1971. I remember going up there. I didn't even have, I had the same bike. This is the same. On the road, it was the same bike that I got out the front garden.
Out the garden, yeah. Wow.
That's the same bike that I was riding. And I didn't have alloy wheels. I had steel wheels on this bike.
Gosh, that's heavy.
I got back from Wales, and then I got the local bike shop, Ken Bird, built some alloy wheels for me, sprint wheels. And so come Easter, I think it was, I rode my first race. This is with the schoolboys. That's what it was. So that was between 14 to 16 year old, yeah?
And so did your dad know now at 16 that you were riding bike?
No, he knew I was riding, but they never, no. My parents, I think I was probably a British champion before they ever saw me ride a bike.
Really?
Yeah, I just went, well, it's no problem to me. I just went and I just did it, you know? I just went there and did it. And I rode at Crystal Palace the first time. Was called the Brian Robinson Grand Prix. I met Brian Robinson about 3 years ago, and I said to him, I said, you know, the first race I rode was named after you. Anyway, wow. Yeah, the Brian Robinson Grand Prix. So I came fifth in the first race I ever rode. I was fifth. That was a Sunday. And then the Tuesday after that, the next race I rode, I came second. And then at Herne Hill, they had the track league Monday comp. And I don't think I ever lost a race that first year. I never lost a race. I ended up with twice the points of the second rider. It was points. You get points for each race. And I won with 83 points against 42 points the second rider had.
Oh.
Because of the situation, I didn't have no one to take me to all over the place, the different race. But I raced at Herne Hill and Crystal Palace, and then sometimes I think once or twice I went to Paddington, which meant I had to go across London to get there. And that was about what I did the first year. But I won all the championships in the club. And there was one or two riders that their nose was a bit went out of joint when I came along, because they were the, you know, somebody, and then I, this young fella came along.
Yeah.
So that was my first year as a schoolboy, and then the next year I was junior, which I turned 16 in October. You see, October 71. Mm. Then I rode with the juniors. You see, so then with the juniors, you rode with juniors, but also pretty much with some of the on the track. They raced with adults as well. Mm. I went to the national. I rode the junior sprint championship at Leicester. I'd never ridden on a steep track before, but the bike I had was the same bike on the track, was one of the council bikes from Herne Hill. That's what I took up there. So this was a bike with steel cranks. I mean, it, anyway, I came fourth. Wow. in that race. I never raced in the road race and that, because I didn't mean to get to these events wasn't so easy for me.
So how did you get to Leicester?
How did I get to Leicester? I think what happened was I got a lift with Heffernan. You know, you ever heard of that guy, Steve Heffernan?
Yes, vaguely.
Yeah, I think I got a lift with Heff, you know, up there. That's what happened. Mm. He's a little bit older than me. He wasn't racing against me at that point in that, you know, but I went up with Heff, I think, and I came fourth.
Good for you. And so did that open doors for you then?
Not necessarily, no, not really. I was going in the right direction. I think I won the division on the road. I rode on the road in the division championships, Southeast London division, that is. Mm-hmm. I think this fellow called Dave Pittman rode away because he was a good climber. He rode away, but I won the sprint.
Yeah.
He won the race, but I won the sprint. And then on the track, I won the division championships in the sprint, and I don't. And I rode at some point his ESCA, English School Cycling Association. Yeah. I won in that as well. But I'd still mostly rode locally. But then the next year was 1973. And that's the year when I went to Wales. And that year was a bit more serious for me. I rode the Good Friday meeting. I rode the White Hope Sprint. And the only thing what happened is that it was only afterwards that I realized that, because I had these chain rings, but they were very worn. By the time 1973, I got a bike from the same people who supplied the bikes at Herne Hill. Young Cycles gave me a bike, a track bike.
All right.
So I had a proper track bike now. I had these chain rings and they were quite worn, and I thought I had a 48 chain ring on, you see, in the White Hope Sprint, but I was spinning the gear around so fast. But anyway, come the final, there's a picture somewhere, and we were all in a line, and I lost the final by about half a wheel, but it actually ended up that I had an 82 inch gear on. I had something like 8:46:15.
Oh gosh.
And it was only afterwards that I realised I had the wrong gear on, you see. But never mind. So I lost. I didn't win the White Hope Sprint. But after that, they had a selection at Leicester. You could turn up anybody. Well, I don't know if anybody, but I put my name forward because that year was the first junior world championships.
Oh, right.
And so I went up to Leicester and I went up on the train and I walked from the train station to the track with my bike and my wheels.
Cool.
And Norman Shield was the national coach. I don't know if you heard of that man.
No.
Well, Norman Shield was world pursuit champion in 1955, the year I was born. Norman was world pursuit champion. And he was the national coach. He was one of the few, I think they had him, and then they had two or three people in the office in Park Crescent in London, and that was the total amount of people on the payroll for the BCF at the time.
Much smaller.
Anyway, I went up there and I got my bike together and got on the track, and what happened is that his eyes looked like his eyes popped out of his head.
Oh, wow.
And from that point, I was in the squad straight away, you see. And they had a training week at Lillishaw. Have you heard of that? Lillishaw. It's in Shropshire. It's the National Training Centre.
All right.
I remember the school was quite proud as well of it, because the Parents Teacher Association gave me £10 towards to help out. But £10 was
a lot. Was
quite a bit in those days, because it was, because I remember my first job when I left school was only £9.50 a week. Mm. So £10 was a reasonable amount of money. So anyway, they gave me that money and I went to the week at Lillishaw. I mentioned to someone today about that week because there was the British team and there was the Irish team was there as well. And the Irish team, there was a young fella and he was quite a little, he was a bit of a comedian and his name was Sean Kelly.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. And that's the first time I came across Sean when we were 17 years old, both the same age.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had to ride on the road and we rode on the road it's near Shropshire, Lillishaw. And the nearest track was Wolverhampton, Aldersley Stadium. And we used to go on the track in the morning and then on the road in the afternoon.
Mm.
Anyway, one afternoon we rode on the road and what happened? It was about 60 miles we had to do.
That's a long way.
And on the way back, this lorry went past us, so I jumped on it and got behind this truck, and left the rest of them. All because it weren't just the track riders, it was the road riders and the track riders,
yeah.
And so I left a lot of them. I remember Norman Shield was standing at this, it was a long road, and when you go into the gates at this place, Lillishaw. So as I went up the gate, there was nobody else with me, I was on my own going up. But he didn't know. I didn't tell him that I jumped, got behind a truck.
No.
But Norman took to me, He was a kind, he was a good man, and he took to me. And he gave me my first pair of trainers, Norman did, Adidas trainers, because I didn't have things like trainers and all that, you see.
No.
From there, I got selection. I went to the junior championships at Munich.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so I went there and I rode two events. One was the sprint and one was the points race. And I won't mention the mechanic. I'm not going to say who it is at this stage. But what happened was that I had a brand new chainring this time to go with. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Because I needed a bigger gear to ride at Munich because it was the Olympic track from 1972 Olympics. It was quite a fast track compared with what I was used to. But what happened was that the chain was a new chain ring, but the chain wasn't, and it didn't mesh, and it was making a hell of a noise, a racket. You could hear it all around the stadium. And so what the mechanic did, he got a file and started to file the teeth on the chain ring.
Thanks.
When the truth is, what he should have done, knowing what I know now, is just put a new chain on it and a new sprocket, but they didn't. And so in the sprint, the first thing that happened was I was riding against this Russian who didn't look like a boy. He looked like a man.
Mm.
Anyway, it didn't work out too well. And that's the truth. With all the noise coming out anyway, I didn't do too well in that. But come the points race, I got in the final in the points race.
On the same bike?
Yeah, I don't know what they did with the chain ring. They must have sort of, maybe they changed or found out something. But by then, they managed, this was later, maybe a day or two later.
Oh, they fixed it.
Maybe somehow they fixed it. I can't remember that. But what I remember, the wheels that I had, because we had to supply everything. The wheels were from one of the coaches at Herne Hill. As I said, his name was Mike Armstrong. He'd ridden in amateur 6 days in East Germany and things like that when he was younger. So I was in the final on these wheels that I got from the coach at Herne Hill.
Yeah.
And I got out of the saddle in the race for the first sprint, I'm not sure. But I got out of the saddle and the tyres came off the rim.
Oh, God.
They tried to say that the wheels weren't prepared properly. Now, I don't know, but in the time when your son was riding, could you imagine that British Cycling had a mechanic who then turned around? I mean, how can you come to a boy of 17 years old and tell him that the wheels weren't prepared properly? At the end of the day, isn't that his job to make sure the wheels are right?
The mechanic, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the outcome with my experience.
You weren't injured, though. You stayed upright.
No, I didn't. Well, at those days, and from time to time, I did have used to, I've had a few falls on the bike. And at that point, the trouble with me is, you see, and maybe that's another reason my dad didn't want me to ride, is that I haven't got any fear.
Yeah.
That was your first trip abroad to Munich with Hefner.
It was my first trip abroad. Yeah, it was my first time on an aeroplane. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I came back from that and I won the national championship, the sprint at Leicester. Brilliant. Junior sprint championship. I won
Congratulations.
That. Actually, thinking about it, the year before, 1972, yeah, I forgot about that. I rode in the nationals, I rode in a senior national in 1972 as well.
Right.
I forgot about this. Paddington, when Hef won the national championship, that's the first time they selected me, even though I was a junior. I was only 16, but they put me in that race. I don't think I did anything great in it, but I was in it. But one thing I remember from that year, 72, this is the year before I'm back now to 72. After the Olympic Games, I was in a 20K race, and it was me. I was side by side with Hef going through the line. This was when I was 16, sprinting for the line. And all of a sudden, somebody went whoosh like that over both of us, me and Hef. And as I said, he's about 3 years older than me, and he was British champion at the time, 20K. And he looked at me and I looked at him, and we thought, who the hell is that? And and I tell you this now, it's the only rider that I don't think I've ever got the better of all the way through. And his name was Danny Clark. Have you heard of Danny Clark?
No, I haven't.
No? Well, Danny Clark, he's Australian.
So what was he doing in your national champions?
Danny, he won the silver at the Olympic Games at Munich in the kilo. And he was on his way back, passing through, and he rode in this race. And you know what? I saw this man not too long ago in Lanzarote in the winter. We had a chat with this guy, not Danny, just somebody who happened to be in the race when at this same race. He was in the race.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, he said that Danny was behind him and Danny was shouting to him, up, up, and he didn't quite get it. And then Danny came out with some words that I can't really use on this thing with you ladies. He said, get that out the way sort of thing. And anyway, and then he moved out and Danny went through, and that's when he passed this guy and caught us and went past us and won the race.
Amazing.
Danny was a six-day rider like me.
Yeah.
In Belgium. He lived in Belgium and he won. Tony Doyle, you heard of Tony, haven't
I've
you?
Most
of the races he won were with Danny, with Clark.
All right. Going back, you'd been in the national championships and you'd gone abroad to Munich, and you were now part of the team, the British.
Kind of, yeah. It wasn't quite like it is now, you know, nothing like that. But yeah, I was British champion sprint, junior sprint.
73 this was it, Maurice?
Yeah, 1973, I won the first British title that I won. And then Norman Shearer was still the national coach, and he had made a decision that whoever won that race would go to the Commonwealth Games in 1974, early
70s. Ah, right.
In New Zealand, which is what happened to me. Only problem was, I say problem because for me it was, I think, was that Norman was no longer the British coach, was no longer national coach by the time we went to the Commonwealth Games. He had a falling out. I don't know exactly what happened, but I know he went to Canada. And I think he had a nervous breakdown because of the whole thing.
Wow.
But they had a new coach whose name was Tom Pinnington. And he was very good with Phil Griffiths. I think he was mates with Phil. But he was from Liverpool. But he didn't like me at all. It was not to say.
Why didn't he like you? Was there a reason? Or
I don't really want to. I can only just tell you that he just didn't like me. No.
You think it was prejudice or?
You know, I don't know really, Anne, but
difficult.
Well, let me explain a little bit anyway. So the Commonwealth Games, I rode in the sprint, which, you know, later on, I realised that although I could sprint, but I found that, say, for example, the best sprinters in the world in an actual pure sprint, they could get the better of me. But if the race was, say, 10 kilometres or 20 kilometres, that was different. I could get the better of them. So it was me coming to terms with the fact that maybe I'm not going to be just a pure sprinter. I'm going to be better at a little bit longer distance.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. Because the coach that I had, Bill Dodds, he said to me, when you go to the games, he said, try to see if you can get a ride in the 10 mile. I couldn't do that. I couldn't. Because it was the likes of Ian Hallam, Mick Bennett, Willie Moore, Heff and all them. I couldn't. I was just turned 18. I couldn't, you know, anyway.
You were young.
But what happened later that year, well, Australian rider John Nicholson won the sprint anyway. And John came to Europe after the New Zealand. And he took me under his wing a little bit. And he taught me, that man taught me to drive. Nico.
Oh.
Traveled around with him, I think. Yeah, so now we're going into 1974 now, aren't we? Yeah.
74, yeah.
Yeah, so I told you that 73, I rode the White Hope Sprint, but I had the wrong gear. So 1974, the promoter at Herne Hill that year was a man called Ron Webb. I don't know if you've heard of Ron Webb.
I've heard of Ron.
Ron Webb built the Olympic velodrome and so forth. Well, Ron said to me, even though you're an international rider now, you haven't won that race. You need to win that race. So he put me in the race and I duly won the race. I won the White Hope Sprint. There was a few international races. So the Italians were there and the Italian coach was there too. Guido Costa was there and he saw this. Anyway, later that year, I was traveling with Nico. We called him Nico, John Nicholson, world sprint champion he was. Uh-huh. And I was traveling with him and we were in Milan. And it was the Milan Grand Prix, and it was just tight. It finished. The Grand Prix of Milan was on a track called the Vigorelli Velodrome in Milan. Yeah. It's still there. And at the time, the Giro, the Tour of Italy, finished on the track that day.
Yeah.
And the day before, I wasn't in the race as such. And then Guido Costa saw me with Nico, and he recognized me from London, and he put me in the race.
Oh, wow.
Put me up in the hotel and everything like that. I didn't do so great. I was up against Morillon on the first round, and he beat me. But still, it was an experience. Yeah, so that was 1974. Yeah, so then I traveled with Nico and I was working as well at the time. I was an apprentice electrician, but I used to manage to get a lot of time off for training and things like that.
Oh.
And come to the national championships now. Again, the sprint, I came up against, you heard of Dave LeGrise, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was a little bit intimidated. And so I didn't want to cut him off, really. Anyway, the long and the short of it is I held myself back a little bit for the 20K race. Because all the championships were on 1 week at Leicester. So I came home and I went back up there on the train to ride this 20K race. And the night before, I couldn't get anywhere to stay, really. So I slept in the table tennis room at Leicester. There was a table tennis room on some cushions. And I got up and, it was on grandstand. The race was on the BBC. And I got in the break. There was me and there was Heffernan and Murray Hall. I can't remember. I think Mick Bennett was there too in the break. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I put three lengths or four lengths into him in the straight, going into the straight and won the race.
Good.
And the men that I beat that day, there was Heff, who was gold medalist at the Commonwealth Games, and Murray Hall, who was Australian, was silver medalist at the Commonwealth Games, same distance.
Wow.
And I beat Murray Hall about 2 weeks before to win the London 20K as well. I won the London 20K and beat him. And then 2 weeks later, I won the national. But holding the flowers up, there was quite a few boos in the crowd, naturally, at Leicester when I won the race.
And why was that?
I didn't worry me too much. Well, Heff wasn't happy as well. He had a go at the, he shouted something, I think, and the people, he got reprimanded by the officials for it, you know.
Sorry, what did Hef do? I missed that.
I don't think he was happy about the fact that they were booing.
No.
Even though they had been, you know. There was people that were booing. And it was, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And but, well, what can you say? I mean, it was probably, yeah, they didn't like the colour of my skin.
No.
It didn't worry me too much. Oh. I had a smile on my face, even though they were booing.
Well, you'd won. You deserved to.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it, what the best, the comment in Cycling Weekly was that somehow they kind of made it as if I was lucky or something to win that race.
All right.
Mm. See? Yeah, but then when you look, I did beat the gold and silver medalist at the Games, and I beat the silver medalist the week 2 weeks before to win the London Championship. But in spite of winning these races and things like that, you know, I mean, there was other races that I won as well, which, you know, I'm not going to go into detail now, but 74, 75, I wasn't exactly in the squad, put it that way, right, in the British cycling squad. And I was hoping, I was looking towards the Olympics in 76.
Of course you were.
I've just mentioned 75 now a little bit, what happened at the national championships again. So a year later now, we're coming into the same race, the 20K, where I was the defending champion. And believe it or not, the same Heffernan was actually boxing me in. I don't know whether he was working for Hallam or Bennett. I don't know, but he was boxing me in. And I had to push him out of the way and get through, but it was late. I was coming around a whole lot of him late. And then a rider came up and he's, pedal went in my wheel and I crashed.
Oh.
I crashed going into the last lap of, into on the coming into the as I was coming past.
Oh.
Anyway, so I didn't finish the race. I never finished the race. I crashed. And then what happened? The officials decided, they decided to disqualify me.
Why you?
Well, what got me at the time and what still gets me now was, what's the point? Why would you want to disqualify somebody who didn't even finish the race?
Makes no sense.
It was as if to me that I was obviously down, a little bit down. And so they I was down and they just wanted to put that little bit of an extra boot in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't make no difference. It just showed me where I stood with these people.
Gosh.
See?
Yeah.
I was in the Archer. I left the BC. I was in the Archer Club at that year with the same Hef and the Knees guys. We won the team pursuit.
Good.
Broke the British record. That was my third championship that I won. We won that same 75 at Leicester. We won the team pursuit.
Right.
And then I rode with Hef in the Madison, was 80K, and me and him were second to Hallam and Bennett.
Right.
And after that, I forgot to mention as well before, I have to step back a little bit now. See, because this is a long time ago, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to step back a little bit to the winter of 74, 75. So I was British champion, 20K.
Yeah.
And what happened was I got a personal invitation from the federations in Trinidad and Barbados to ride in February, March 1975 in the West Indies, all expenses paid.
Oh, what an opportunity.
And I had this invitation and it came via the Federation because they didn't know my address. And I, being a young guy, I thought that they knew the Federation. So what happened was that you had to go to Blackpool, was the prize presentation for the British Cycling, British BCF, when you know, to collect your trophy.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there in, this was December 75. I went there to Blackpool. All the expense was paid, you know, and I went there and then I happened to mention to some officials that I was at this invitation to go to Trinidad and Barbados.
Yeah.
And they said to me, well, they said, you know, you haven't been selected by the racing committee, so you won't be able to wear a Great Britain jersey. Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't the end of the world to me, because there was no way I was going to turn down a trip to the West Indies in February. All paid.
No.
So
you like your son.
So what happened was, I thought, well, now how am I going to get myself in shape to be able to make a good impression in February or March? You see, so what happened was, an Australian fellow was over here at the time who was friends with, well, it was an Australian that won the Duke, that won the senior sprint in 1974. It's the last Australian to do that, because they stopped him doing that after that. His name was Malcolm Hill. He beat Jeff Cook, you see.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because Jeff always came second to a guy called Ernie Crutchlow. Ernie Crutchlow retired, and so Jeff thought he was going to win. And then Malcolm Hill came along, and he beat him. And Jeff's father was on the racing committee, and they stopped Australians coming in to ride the British World, Commonwealth riders, I should say. Because before that, Commonwealth riders were able to ride in the British Championships. So anyway, Malcolm Hill won the sprint, and a friend of his who travelled with him, a guy called Peter Verleystone, he is already a pro, and he wanted to try his luck. He wanted to come into the six-day races in Europe, you see. Mm-hmm. And I heard he was going to Belgium in the winter. And so I went to Pete and I said, could I come with him to Belgium? And so that's what happened. I went with him to Belgium, and we left Christmas Eve.
This is Christmas Eve.
This is Chris, 1974.
74.
Yeah. So I was 20K champion at the time, yeah? The first time I went to Belgium with Pete.
This was your first experience of 6 days. And 6 day was huge then, wasn't it?
Well, this was the 6 day in Ghent had already taken place in November. So this was in December. But in those days, there was races every weekend in Ghent. And the day we got there, Christmas Day is a big meeting in Ghent in those days, the Christmas Day meeting. And so we watched the race, and then we had to try to find somewhere to live. We went to the track. Somebody in the track found us a place in what they used to call, it was called the butcher shop. But he wasn't a butcher anymore. He used to collect newspaper. That's where I stayed, in the butcher's shop.
Oh, right.
And then I rode again the first time. A few days later, after Christmas, there was the Saturday race in Ghent, and it was a devil take the hindmost elimination.
Right, yeah.
And I went underneath and come up. I got disqualified. And the man in charge of everything in Ghent, in the Ghent Sport Palace at the time, was a man called Oscar Damas. And Oscar, he was, you know, there's certain people along the way who took a liking to me. And Oscar was one of them.
Yeah.
He took a liking to me. And he'd been the Belgian coach for many years. I mean, Merckx, Sir Q, all these people, all under how many sick world champions and people he'd helped. Anyway, he took me under his wing. And it went quite well for me in Ghent. I rode in Ghent, I rode in Rotterdam, and I rode in Antwerp, some races and things like that. And what Oscar said, he wanted me to come back the next winter to ride in the amateur 6 day, mm-hmm. the Ghent 6 day. And so what he did, the last race they had in Ghent was February, and this was before I went off to Trinidad and Barbados. So the last race, it's called the Night of Vedetten, and it's the Night of the Stars. And they had two races for amateurs that day. And before the race, 2 days before, Oscar said to me, I went to see Oscar, and he said to me, I'm going to give you a cadeau. Do you know what the cadeau is?
A gift.
Right. He said, I'm going to give you a cadeau. And so what happened, what Oscar did, he put all the good riders in one race and put me in the other race. And so that I've got a picture somewhere. I've got a picture when I won the race. I've got with the flowers.
Oh, wow.
That was my parting race from Ghent. So I left from Ghent, went back to the UK, went to Trinidad and Barbados. I won a couple of races over there. One race that I won was I beat one rider was Olympic kilometer champion and world's kilometer champion, and the other rider in fourth place was 8 times world sprint champion. His name Morillon, And I beat those guys to win that race. Yeah. I was wearing my national champions jersey, but the federation wasn't happy about it, about me going. But yeah.
At least she has a jersey. You talked a little bit about the 6 days. They were very different, the 6 days then. I know Jonathan, you know, he's only done a couple where they've got the cabins and everything. The actual riders used to stay at the track virtually all the time, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you did that? You slept at the track?
Well, and what happened is that, let me just, so if we go to that winter, which was 74, 75, then I went on to Barbados. I came back and I told you what happened at the national championship, how I crashed and all that. I was a little bit down with it all of that later on in August. So then what I did then was, you know, I got the, because I wasn't working anymore. The time I went to Belgium, I had to decide at that point, because I'd been British champion twice, but I thought, am I going to be good enough to make a living at this? And so I had to go there to find out, really. And I had 2 weeks holiday from work. And I decided at that point, either I'm going to be an electrician or I'm going to be a cyclist.
Yeah.
And I never went back to work, to tell you the truth. I never went back. So the next winter, after the nationals and so forth, coming into September now, was the London 6 day. And I got a job working at the track with the person who was doing the advertising. It's a guy, he's passed away the other year. His name is Keith Robbins. He had a business called BK Products and he did the advertising on the side of the track.
Yeah.
I was working with him. And what happened, I worked and there was another fellow working with him. And this guy, he was selling a car and he needed a bike. So what happened was I fixed up his bike. I used to fix bikes up and things and sell them to people and all that. And I fixed up his bike. And he wanted £140 for the car. So I sold him the bike for 70 and paid him 70 cash and got the car. I got the car on the Friday and the Saturday, I had a little practice in the car. And Sunday, I got this car and I drove up Edgware Road and I picked up Gary Wiggins, who was staying with Bradley's mum at the time, Linda. This was long before Bradley was ever thought of.
Yeah.
And I drove them up to Wolverhampton and we went and rode a race up there. A week later, I took this car and went to Belgium with all my wheels and everything.
Wow.
So I went to Belgium. This was the second time that Oscar had asked me to come back and I did. And I stayed at the butcher's shop again. Anyway, I wasn't in my best shape, to be honest with you. And the first race I rode, I came fifth. And it wasn't enough for me. And I thought, if I don't pull my finger out here, I'm going to run out of money.
Mm.
So yeah. I devised a training program and I get up and I had to train on the track. I train on the road in the morning and then in the afternoons I go to the track because I live within walking distance of where the Sport Palace is in Ghent.
Yeah.
I did this for a couple of weeks and then I started winning races. And come to the 6 day, Oscar put me with a Dutch rider in the 6 day in Ghent. And you know what? I've seen pictures recently. Bradley Wiggins sent me some pictures that somebody he got from this 6 day. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, in this 6 day, this is my first ever 6 day, going into the final, we were leading with 2 laps in front of the Belgian champions, which was a guy called Frank Hoster and Ferdy Vandenhouten. We were leading them by 2 laps. In other words, it was virtually, with an hour to go, with 2 laps lead, it was virtually impossible. But my partner, he was a Dutchman. I didn't get anything, but he sold the race. We came.
Right. So
they were able to take 3 laps on us in 1 hour. It was supposed to be that we weren't supposed to win.
It was like that, those 6 day racing, wasn't it?
Yeah. But that was my first experience. Then I also, that winter, 1975, Oscar Gate, I rode with the pros Christmas Day in the race that I'd gone to watch the year before. I was riding in the race with Merckx and Devlamink and all of these guys. With American rider Roger Young, our name was on the poster. That's how I came to come into the six. I mean, from be honest with you, from that time onwards, from the time I went to Belgium that year, That was 75. I actually did come back to the UK in early 76 because it was an embarrassment to the... There was an article in the Times newspaper. I mean, there was a British team in that game 6 day, but they were nowhere. They were nowhere.
So you were embarrassing them.
You know, and it was a bit of an embarrassment. The fact is that I wasn't even in the squad, you know. Never mind whether I was going to the Olympics. I just wasn't even in the squad. And there was guys in that squad. I don't think they'd even won a race. Anyway, they took me back in. But, you know, I gave it my best. But I didn't think that it was going to work. But I felt, you have to try. So I did. But it wasn't to be. And so when they made the selection, the day after that, I think I rode at Paddington on the Sunday. And I won the 20K, the Devil, and second in the sprint. Jeff Cook won the sprint. And I won £56 that day. And I took that money and I went to Belgium with it the next day. And I don't think I hardly ever, the only time I came back here to ride in this country after that was when I was a pro in the London 6 day or things like that. I never, or the Kellogg's races. I just never bothered with racing in the UK.
Maurice, you'd won all these British titles, 3 British titles, is that right?
Yeah.
And you weren't selected for the Olympics in 76?
No. I wanted to go there because my reasoning was if I could get a good result, that meant I could come into, because the Olympics was only open to amateurs, not pros.
Yeah.
And so I wanted a result so that I could come in to the pros on a higher
step up. Yeah.
But I wasn't able to do that. It was hard to come in, but I did in the end. Yeah.
Difficult for you.
Well,
what would you say to them now if you had the chance to speak to those selectors?
What would I say? Well, you have to see, Anne, that it's a different, there were different times, Anne, and people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have no real regrets or anything about it, you know. I don't have no anger towards these people in any way or form, because I got to where I wanted to go, and you know, even up till now, and my life isn't so bad, you know.
Mm.
See, my life's not so bad.
Good.
And I'm doing okay.
You are doing okay, and you've worked really hard to get there. One thing I will ask, Maurice, what advice would you give somebody now trying to get into cycling, particularly as you've talked about earlier, that it's not as diverse as it should be? So not only to somebody trying to get into cycling, but also to the powers that be in cycling, what advice would you?
Well, I think things are different now. And I mean, I can only speak from the experience of my own son, there, Jermaine.
Yeah.
And I think your son, John, will say, I mean, I wasn't there with him all the time, but I don't think he had the hindrance that I had. I don't think so at all. I think that if you have the ability, I think you can, you know.
Mm.
I think you can do it if you wanted to. The trouble is, I think that there's youngsters out there who, again, you say, please, my own son, Jermaine. Well, now, supposing his father wasn't a cyclist, then how would he know to get involved with cycling?
Yeah,
exactly.
Grassroots level, because how many black riders are there at sort of top level funding with British Cycling?
No.
No.
No, not many. But then the other side of it is that if you're a talented athlete and maybe you could be good at football, well, football brings in a lot more money than cycling, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that to it as well. You've got to look at it from that point of view.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
So, but the cycling, you know, you look at the African nations now, you know, you've got the Eritrea, you know, where they are doing very well, you know, very, very well. And I think that the success is from black riders will be coming from there, and whether or not they will become a role model to certain riders here that maybe look at them and say, well, you know what, if they can do it, so can I. Mm. Maybe I don't might not.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely.
Maybe. But it's good for the sport. I think everyone acknowledges that. I've heard people say that even in Belgium and everywhere else, that, you know, the fact that it's making the sport more international, you know, which is good. It's positive. It's a positive move.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Thank you, Maurice.
Okay.
I hope we haven't kept you away from your wine, Maurice.
No, I'm all right. I wouldn't have had another glass. One glass is enough for me in the evening, but then, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you very, very much, Maurice.
Pleasure.
British cycling is different now, and both our sons, Jermaine and Jonathan, were on the academy together, becoming good friends and even housemates. But there is still a long, long way to go. Once again, thank you to Maurice and to you, our listeners. We really do hope that you enjoy the show and appreciate all the feedback. In fact, our next show will hopefully feature my father, whom several of you said you'd like to hear more from following Hillary's show. Just need to persuade him to actually allow me to record some of his many, many stories. Thank you for listening. Take care. Maurice is just about to have a book published all about him, so do keep an eye on our show notes to find out more about how you can get hold of the book. Bye.